This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where 9 out of 10 dentists said, "What the fuck are you talking about?" when asked if they would recommend listening to Journey to the Fringe on a daily basis. We are your podcast hosts who, to get the bluntness of a dentist that you need in your surveys, we had to contact them outside of their workplace, and my God, it is hard to track down 10 dentists. Anyhow, that's none of your business. We just needed to know that stat. We are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea. Here today, I think looking at... A historic asshole is, would that, I don't know, Chelsea, it's your person. So I'll
need to take you on a journey of asshole today, and I might even redefine it.
Okay.
And I don't mean to get you excited right off the hop here. Well, I do a little because we're here for a podcast.
And we got to hook you for like 45 to 50 minutes.
Yeah. So I hope that got you excited enough to listen to the whole episode. And here I am today feeling like I'm having deja vu after the last 48 hours. We're going to take a look at John Keel today, who should be going by Alva John Keel, but instead he goes by John A. Keel. And he's known probably best in my realm for the Mothman prophecies.
He's come up in a few episodes before. Like, he has come up originally in the Mothperson episodes and the Men in Black episodes.
Briefly, yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be a two-parter. Today I'm going to look at John Keel, and next episode I'm going to take a look at the Mothman prophecies itself. To get ready for this, I listened to a beautiful Art Bell Coast to Coast AM episode in which he interviews John Keel for the first time, and boy was that a boring listen.
The guy was a writer, not a talker.
Yeah, no, he sure was. Anyway, from his Wikipedia, quote, Keel is considered, I don't think the quote was supposed to start here, I think it was supposed to start here. What? No, there, here. One of ufology's most widely read and influential authors, end quote. As a researcher, he was both original and controversial. Richard Haddam, the screenwriter for the Mothman Prophecies, has described Keel as the Hunter S. Thompson of paranormal writers, which I reject, by the way, just completely.
Why? Did he have like a bone to pick with Nixon?
He just kind of travels all over the place and interviewing people and giving his opinion on things. I don't know. I don't see it. I'm a huge Hunter S. Thompson fan. I don't get the. I just reject that. I don't see any similarities between them. So, anyhow, that's that. Keel was born in Hornell, New York, the son of a singer and band leader. His parents divorced early on, and Keel was raised by his grandparents in Perry, New York, until his mother remarried. He was fascinated by magic from an early age and was known as Houdini by his friends. He loved reading about magic, humor, science, travel, and aviation. His first story was published in a magician's magazine when he was 12 years old, which is like super young. At age 14, he was determined to become a writer. He had a column in the Perry Herald named Scraping the Keel. He published a science fiction fanzine named The Lunarite, and he routinely sent stories to magazines in New York. At the age of 16, he had taken all of the science courses at his school and decided to quit school and write full-time, as Chelsea, you do when you run out of science courses.
I am just curious, how many science courses?
All of them.
Okay. Five. Both.
Yes, all two of them. And who even knows what grade those went up to in those days?
Yeah. That's what I'm a little worried about. I feel like that's maybe an exaggeration. And spoiler alert, I feel like this guy's known for his exaggerations.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Okay.
At 17, he relocated to New York City to make a living as a writer. And he lived in Greenwich Village and became the editor of a poetry magazine. He worked as a freelance contributor to newspapers, scriptwriter for local radio and television outlets, and author of pulp articles such as Are You a Repressed Sex Fiend? That actually makes a lot of sense, the writings I've read at least.
Sorry, are you questioning yourself, or is this with regards to John Keel?
In regards to Keel.
Okay.
Thank you for allowing me to clarify that. When he was 18, he had a strange but classic illumination experience in his furnished room off Times Square. He remembered the room filled with an indescribable light, a pinkish glow, and his mind flooded with a torrent of information. I actually can't find any more information on that at all, other than that one or two sentences.
It would just be coming from him, right? Like, it doesn't seem like anybody else is involved, so there would be no other sources.
You would think. In 1951, he was drafted into the U.S. Army during the Korean War. He spent his military years in Frankfurt, of all places, because he had worked with radio and television, working mostly for the American Forces Network. Some of his programming ideas, a remote broadcast from the Great Pyramid, another from Frankenstein's Castle, earned him a great deal of publicity. Because he had worked with radio and television, he was assigned to the radio. Within 1 year, he was the chief of productions for the network. He claimed that while in the army, he was trained in psychological warfare as a propaganda writer. It seems to me, from what I was able to find, that that is the claim. Everything else just stated that he was in, like, broadcasting in the army. So I don't know what to do with that information. After this time with the military, he was a foreign radio correspondent in Paris, Berlin, Rome, and Egypt. When his 2 years of military service ended, he was offered and accepted a civilian job for the army. At the age of 24, he resigned and traveled for 4 years around the Middle East and Southeast Asia, similar to Billy Meyer, but I believe Keel keeps both of his arms. Pretty sure he died with both of them, yeah. Oh, that was a spoiler.
Well, maybe he got it back at some point.
Maybe. I mean, who's to say, given the shit that he's seen? He tried to find performers of the Indian rope trick, investigate fakirs and yogis, and he even tried to track the Yeti. The journey became his first published book, Jadu. A lot of people really like this book. That's all I have to say about that.
But it sounds like it's fiction, though, right? Like, not true story.
Sounds like it is true. Hold on, let's see. Is Jadu fiction or non-fiction? iPhoneinCanada.ca.
I knew it.
It's non-fiction, according to iPhoneinCanada.ca.
That's a reliable source. I don't know why we use any other websites. You can get all your news. You can buy stuff.
And when Jadu was published in 1957, he moved back to NYC and promoted it by performing with cobras in the window of the Midtown Aquarium at Times Square. What a weird fucking
I'm sorry,
thing
what? Yeah.
He performed with cobras in the window of the Midtown Aquarium at Times Square.
Do we know how he performed with the cobras?
No. Okay. I would assume that it was similar to Britney Spears' famous performance of, what was that, Toxic?
Sure, he's got a sexy getup. I'm just like, in my mind, I'm picturing like the Indian, like, I don't know, like flute player, the snake charmer, like that. But
I have no idea
where he'd pick that up. And also he was in Korea, which is not known for its cobras.
Oh, he wasn't in Korea.
Right.
Right.
That raises further questions.
I get it. iPhone Canada.ca. It's a huge distraction. I get it. Stop, turn, close the tab. Pay attention. He also did many TV and radio appearances. He suffered a bit of writer's block after this and turned to editing the magazine Echo.
Could it be all the poison from the cobras?
Could be, because he was just bitten constantly.
I have to assume. He has no background for it.
Duncan Wagnalls also hired him as a science and geography editor. What does that even mean? During the 60s, he worked for television. He was the chief writer for lots of shows I've never heard of, so I didn't even note them.
I thought the biography was vague and that he just worked for television.
This is, of course, my notes.
Right.
Yes, that's my vagueness. He wrote some novels using the pseudonym Harry Gibbs. In 1966, he wrote a fiction novel named The Fickle Finger of Fate. It sold an estimated 600,000 copies.
Okay, but that one has to be fiction.
Yeah, I would assume so. It would have to be, but who's going to look and tell us? Not me.
I don't know if iPhoneinCanada.ca has that kind of stuff.
In 1966, Playboy asked him to write an article about UFOs. That's what he called them on the Art Bell Show for the magazine. But his work was rejected and never printed. J. Allen Hynek actually ended up writing the article. And Keel had, however, become hooked on the subject after this. I feel like I would be too pissed to continue on with it if my article was rejected. But that's all I got to say. He then traveled around the country interviewing witnesses and writing dozens of articles. The phenomenon, he learned, took its toll on its investigators. He entered a shadowy world where black cars vanished on country roads, meaningless messages turned up in hotel rooms, and his phone and mail suffered strange interceptions. In 1966, he made repeated visits to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, then the site of the particularly active Monster and UFO Flap. The result was one of his most popular books, The Mothman Prophecies and Operation Trojan Horse. Along the way, he also put out a lively newsletter, Anomaly, wrote a regular column for Saga, and published several classic books on Fortiana.
I've never heard of Fortiana because like Fortians is a thing.
No, Fortian, yeah, because of Charles Fort.
Yeah.
Fortian, but there's an A at the end of it. Fortiana.
Could that just be a typo?
I don't know.
Okay.
The material was used in his books Operation Trojan Horse. He also made repeated visits to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and investigating...
Oh no, Fortiana is a thing. It is. The Charles Fort Institute.
Fortiana. His interviews and thoughts concerning UFOs were published in magazines such as Flying Saucer Review, Flying Saucer, Saga, and Saucer News. He was a technical advisor to the Library of Congress, 1968-69, and special consultant to the Office of Scientific Research and Bureau of Radiology, 1968-71, before becoming a consultant to the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Interesting turn at the end there. He was a member of the Screenwriters Guild, FYI, which makes sense because he had so much background in the television.
Yeah, he worked long, extensive hours in television.
Yeah, that's what I said. So glad we're keeping up. Keel actually invented the term Men in Black in an article for the Men's Adventure magazine Saga, published 1967.
Oh, he was in Men's Adventure magazine?
Yeah.
I love those old ones. Like, have you ever looked at the covers for these? They're fantastic. One sec. You keep talking.
Is it on iPhoneCanada.com? Okay.
I don't think it is.
On the back of my Mothman Prophecies book, it just says, quote, John A. Keel was a prominent journalist and ufologist, credited with coining the term Men in Black. He died in 2009, end quote. I love that legacy for him. That's literally all it says on the back of my book.
Okay, Chelsea, this is Men's Adventure magazine.
Let me take a look.
Most Wanted Wild West issue.
Oh, that's nice. Look at them all. What's up with the guy
with the
ripped
shirt? Bottom. Man's Conquest.
Hold on, go back to the main one. Look at this guy with his ripped shirt, third from the left.
Yeah, with the bats?
Yeah.
See, that's just Men's Magazine, so that's not Men's Adventure Magazine. Okay. But Blood Mad Matt of the Lost World.
Totally different
movie. That guy, what's that look on his face? Like, that's just somebody saying, it's a living.
I make that face a lot.
Yeah. Like, did the bat say something really awkward, but still has to work beside them?
Yeah, that's it. He didn't just say that, did he?
There's a cowboy and his bear.
Oh, okay, so the adventure ones, like, are more dangerous.
Oh, yeah, no, these are a lot of fun. There's actually a Behind the Bastards episode that is just reading old Men's Adventure Magazine stories. It's pretty good.
That does sound
funny. One where, like, this man has a love affair with this woman and she gets eaten by crabs and he has to fight off
what?
The crabs.
I think I listened to that episode.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at that racism right there.
Oh, wow.
Martin O'Hare's House of Forbidden Women. Murder is my job. The kick-happy amateur versus the professional. An analysis of the United Nations report. That's all one title right there. Oh, man, he just punched out an indigenous person.
That's a punch right
there. The woman chasing crew of the Pacific Strangest Convoy. Okay, sorry, you can continue. I needed to show you some of that.
Oh, I really like these. These are pretty nice. Look at this guy, bottom left.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
There's something. He said something on fire.
Who's hell? How to prolong your sex life and Hemingway's private war with Adolf Hitler.
Oh, is that Hemingway that set that thing on fire?
Probably. That's a Hemingway thing to do. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that guy. He's a karate master. Oh, no, he's a pirate.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, back to your thing.
Keel really loves the topic because he writes these books that I haven't already mentioned. Strange Creatures from Time and Space, 1970. Reprinted as The Complete Guide to Mysterious Beings, 1994. Oh, I have that in my library. Wish list. I want to read about it.
Which one, sorry, Chelsea? I was distracted by the spy trap they baited with sex.
It's either that or I'm voting Canada.ca. There's no in between.
There's so many distractions on the internet now.
It's The Complete Guide to Mysterious Beings, 1994. Our Haunted Planet, he wrote. The Flying Saucer Subculture, The Mothman I just said that I haven't mentioned, The Eighth Tower, which he actually published, I believe, of leftover stuff of the Mothman Prophecies.
Oh.
The Cosmic Question, that's The Eighth Tower as it was published in Britain, and then Disneyland of the Gods, which is probably Jungfrau, I would assume.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Isn't it? So, moving on. But I will say before we get into this next part, let's just have a conversation about John Keel. He does seem to be particularly well-loved in the UFO community. And while I do come across some criticism, and I have some myself, I don't think that he's necessarily on high asshole levels as we have seen in the past. I don't honestly think
really?
That. Yeah. I don't. And it'll unfold. We'll have some fun in the next episode. We'll talk about some stuff. I definitely have my feelings about him, but he's definitely not. I don't know that I would throw him in the asshole. I don't know at this point. He's definitely somebody we want to cover because of obviously the Mothman prophecies, and he's fairly prominent. But I just wanted to get that out there. From what I can put together, people love his storytelling ability. And ability to bring many high strangeness happenings and ideas into one. So he's also one of the original ufologists to accept and report on high strangeness, which the only one who really did it before him was Jacques Vallée. versus just a nuts and bolts flying saucer as it was in the beginnings of the Universal Theory of Weird. So I can't hate on that. He was one of the first original people actually reporting all the weird shit that was just flowing into him, which is really hard to come by now because you see people segregating into, you know, what's this or that, and this is the only theory that I'm going to adhere to and not look at all this other stuff. So from that, I do quite enjoy his works because it talks about so much weird stuff. But yeah, like contemporary 1960s researchers such as J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée, Keel was initially hopeful that he could somehow validate the prevailing extraterrestrial visitation hypothesis. However, after a year of investigations, Keel concluded that the extraterrestrial hypothesis was untenable. Indeed, both Hynek and Vallée eventually had a similar conclusion, as Keel himself wrote. Quote, I abandoned the extraterrestrial hypothesis in 1967 when my own field investigations disclosed an astonishing overlap between psychic phenomenon and UFOs. The objects and apparitions do not necessarily originate on another planet and may not even exist as permanent constructions of matter. It is more likely that we see what we want to see and interpret such visions according to our contemporary beliefs. End quote.
That is incredibly early for somebody to be coming to that conclusion.
He was very early. He was around the same time as Jacques Vallée in what he talks about. And we've seen Jacques Vallée actually be thrown under the bus by, who was it, Bill Moore?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I've never really looked into that. But John Keel does appear, well, he is one of the original people that kind of has this unified theory of weird that he concludes with. So there are people who prefer John Keel to Jacques Vallée.
Huh.
I know. I went into this after reading the Mothman Prophecies and I was like, I don't know about this because, like I said, we'll talk about it next week. But no, he's actually beloved, which you'll find with, you know, anybody that we talk about. That's why we get so much hate. That and the giggling.
It's just too inane for the average listener.
People love these assholes and they don't like to hear otherwise. But for John Keel, I haven't been able to find the opposite side of it. Other than, like I said, I came up with a few things and we'll talk about it. The few things aren't really that bad, especially for how early he's around. So yeah, that's my thought at this point. I'm interested on where you'll land at it at the end because, of course, I put everything in. So, in his books, UFOs, Operation Trojan Horse, and The Eighth Tower, Keel argues that a non-human or spiritual intelligence source has staged whole events during a long period of time in order to propagate and reinforce certain erroneous belief systems. For example, monsters, ghosts, and demons, the fairy faith of Middle Europe, vampire legends, mystery airships in 1897, mystery aeroplanes of the 1930s, mystery helicopters, anomalous creature sightings, poltergeist phenomena, spheres of light, and unidentified flying objects, Keel conjectured that ultimately all of these anomalies are a cover for the real phenomena. He used the term ultra-terrestrials to describe UFO occupants he believed to be non-human entities capable of assuming whatever form they desire. In other words, he did not think that UFOs were from other planets, and he was completely against this notion. He instead posited his own hypothetical explanations from where they might come from. He thought of UFOs as manifestations from an extra-dimensional force or state of energy beyond our current understanding.
Well, Chelsea.
Yeah?
I know he's saying this.
Yeah?
But Corey Good introduced the blue avians, and those don't come from Earth. So he clearly is lying. Like, you can't refute,
you know,
that.
And he may have got caught in his lie, but I'm pretty sure
Corey Good
was around.
That's a fair point. And Corey Good copyrighted that, so you know it's real.
Oh, yeah. You know, we've already fully discussed how Corey Good is not an asshole.
Don't give away our future. We've touched on this topic.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, go listen. Yeah. Like, there's an alternate. No, that's our timeline right now in the past. Just go listen to it. There's full of evidence. That sentence makes sense.
Sure, why not?
Okay, let's continue on. In our haunted planet, Kiel discussed the seldom considered possibility that the alien visitors to Earth are not visitors at all, but an advanced Earth civilization which may or may not be human. Interdimensional life is also considered. Kiel analyzed what he called window areas, or zones of fear, which he viewed as areas of high strangeness in which strange otherworldly entities and creatures could enter our world. He favored this explanation for Mothman. He described them as trickster beings or cosmic pranksters here to play simple-minded games with simple-minded humans. I wonder if that's just certain humans or all humans. Like, if he was just trying to be an asshole here.
I like to think how that quote came off. He was talking about humans in general.
Okay.
But it can be interpreted both ways.
Unless you just think everyone's seen a Mothman as an idiot. He's quoted as saying, quote, "From time to time, the playful inhabitants of the other world climb through the curtain in the areas we call windows, and they stalk us to drink our blood, create all kinds of mischievous beliefs and misconceptions in our feeble little terrestrial minds," end quote. And, quote, "This planet is haunted by us. The other occupants just evade boredom by filling our skies and seas with monsters," end quote. See, like, stuff like this... Can you not, like, that's some interesting stuff, especially for the time that this guy was working on this stuff.
Yeah.
That's like, still, I don't know that we've gotten any further than that now.
No, we really, well, it depends on who you ask. There's definitely people who are making a profit of telling us other things.
That's true. In the Eighth Tower in 1975, he wrote, quote, "This is a hypothetical spectrum of energies that are known to exist, but that cannot be accurately measured with present-day instruments," end quote. Kiel continues, quote, "This super spectrum is the source of all paranormal manifestations. It is extra-dimensional, meaning that it exists outside our own space-time continuum, yet influences everything within our reality," end quote. John Kiel considered what others thought of as different phenomenon to all be one in the same, or at least connected. I like that. I have to say that really makes sense.
It does, and it's come up in several episodes where these things kind of have touches with other portions of high strangeness. And it's kind of shunned by the rest of that group.
That's what I was going to say. And it's these like, people to this that day, I like.
It still gets cut.
That don't hold back certain portions because they're trying to, it's like confirmation bias. They just want it to prove their point so they don't look at anything else, but they kind of touch on all this weird stuff.
To that point, I do actually think the people who avoid that do have a good reason for it, in that they're trying to prove this phenomenon exists. So they're only looking for the best cases, not the craziest ones that might connect it to other crazy things within they have to prove.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, that does make sense. But it's such a weird, crazy part of our reality that it's like,
yeah,
what's going to prove what? I mean, John Keel's makes sense. How are you going to prove that? But how are you also going to prove, you know, UFOs are like nut and bolt thing flying in the sky? Taking a picture.
But I don't know. I think I have a fairly interesting viewpoint on that right now, just because I'm finishing up the research on an episode that came out prior to this one. And it's different people trying to justify their worldview against other people's worldviews that are contradictive to theirs.
I was just gonna say that differ from theirs. That's so weird for an asshole episode.
Yeah.
And here we're seeing
who thought they would shit on others.
Here we're saying future and past collide.
Mm-hmm. Outside of the time space continuum.
Yeah. So we can just apply John Keel's theory to this. That's kind of the end of what he talks about. I mean, that's kind of where they make the connection to Hunter S. Thompson, because he like travels all over the world, like just picking up different stories and stuff like this.
Doing lots of drugs.
Then I don't know that he.
That was actually the only part that was the same.
You know, it might make it a lot more interesting, to be honest with you. But yeah, so that's kind of what he talks about. And so one thing, is this what I want to leave it off with? Yeah, this is what I want to leave it off with. So Gil dies. At some point, I can't remember when. And after his death, one of his friends has started a website and they're publishing his letters and writings still, to which a lot of people are still invested in, that are still coming out. And there's still...
So, like, new stuff is still coming out?
Yeah. There's still a lot of unedited content from Point Pleasant coming out still today from his notes that they're posting on his website.
Ah.
I found a particular letter on his thoughts that I wanted to read here to close this out. It's his thoughts on the Philadelphia experiment. And it was too long for me. So I went to AI and lit a light bulb for 20 minutes and had it summarize it here for me. So let's see how it summarized this article on what Keel thinks about the Philadelphia experiment.
And Chelsea, to be fair, if you did it in the dark, you just canceled out the energy.
That's true. Net zero.
Yeah.
I didn't, unfortunately. But next time I will. Keel by candlelight. Taking it back to the last century. Keel writes to Robert A. Gorman and recalls their previous exchanges and Gorman's article in Fate magazine. I guess he was just, you know, writing a nice letter. So you can't just jump right into business. This is old school. The letter discusses Morris K. Jessup's negative view of the Varro document, which he considered a joke, and his pre-suicide letters that reflected his depressive personality. Jessup's suicide was attributed to career setbacks and family problems. The Jessup file was handed to Ivan Sanderson in 1966 for his book on UFOs, and both Sanderson and the author read the material, concluded that the Varro document was the work of a schizophrenic. Keel received letters from Mr. Allende, who provided proof of his identity and admitted to writing the annotations in the Varro book. The author claims that the real perpetrator of the hoax was the Varro secretary who typed up the document, not Allende.
Interesting.
The letter also mentions Allende's unstable personality, evidenced by his erratic letters. Keel researched the Philadelphia Naval Yard's connection to the Manhattan Project, suggesting the garbled stories from this period's influence Allende's claims. Keel briefly mentions the magician, Dunninger, who claimed to make ships invisible during the war, which might have contributed to the legend. The letter critiques the book The Philadelphia Experiment by Charles Berlitz and William Moore, asserting that the book was profitable but ignored much negative material. The author believes that Allende was reportedly dying of cancer in 1970, may still be alive and writing letters, and views him as a victim rather than a conscious hoaxer. So I thought that was fun. If you need a refresher on the Philadelphia experiment, go back. We did a whole couple episodes on it, I believe.
Well, it was part three of the four-part Bill Moore saga.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. Go back and listen to it.
But or was that Majestic 12? No, it's in there somewhere.
No, Majestic 12 was in Bill Moore. Go back and listen to Bill Moore, by the way, because that'll never disappoint. Unless it's, you know, your high hopes that Bill Moore is a good guy. In that case, you know.
Yeah, unless you hate inane laughter and like Bill Moore.
Philadelphia experiment. Go check it out. Whether it's a two-part or a one-part or three-part. That won't disappoint either. Unless you like Bill Moore, then it will. Yeah, so I thought that was an interesting take
on and it. A lot more candid than Bill Moore.
Yeah. I mean, that AI summary was better than the...
It was better research than Bill Moore did into the entire thing, yes. Yeah.
Thank you. I try. So let's get into a little bit of criticism. Okay, I lied. That was the last thing. Criticism is the last thing, and here we go. He kept his sources mostly anonymous, so no one could re-interview them. He asked leading questions, introduced witnesses to ideas from other narratives, and all in all, was a poor interviewer. I'll probably agree with that based on, I mean, I've only read the Mothman Prophecies. I would like to read the other books. Some of them, not all of them. But I will say, just based on what I read, you can kind of tell his interview skills. He was a little bit, a lot leading. He did have very leading questions in his interviews. I mean, he didn't really have a journalist background. He just kind of started writing. And I mean, he was one of the first people doing this. So I don't know, other than just having an interest in it, I can really blame him for that? I don't know.
I feel like if you wanted to make a career of it, you probably should get the skills at some point.
Yeah, I mean, look at what was being put out at that time. We literally just talked about Bill Moore and the Philadelphia experiment. Was anybody doing it good then?
They were way too drunk at the time, from what I understand from Mad Men.
Probably, yeah. I mean, you're definitely right. You should be trying to, I don't know. I don't know what the standards were back then. I don't even know what the standards are now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, they're just as bad, if not worse, today because they need the clicks.
There are people just straight up making shit up.
I mean, technically.
There are people straight up making shit up at that
depending on the day you catch them, Alex Jones sometimes considers himself a journalist. So.
I don't know.
If you bring him to court, he'll deny it profusely, but sometimes journalism does, in fact, come up as a thing he does on his show.
Yeah, that he does. In his own works, he freely admits and explains how he interviews his witnesses. He might not have even realized it, but he implants false memories in the way he asks questions, smells, sounds, placing importance on everyday experiences. All of these things can change or color memories and lead to false connections. The person being interviewed wants to please the interviewer, so when they're asked if they remember a strange phone call days before or after the incident, they'll remember it whether or not it happened. The person goes on to say, read the Mothman prophecies, and Kill admits to stuff like this freely with examples. If you know anything about false memory implantation, it's pretty easy to see why Kiel's interview can't be trusted. There's a ton of this in the Mothman prophecies. I don't know if it has to be. He will just say, I asked this person if they remember anyone strange hanging around before their encounter. He straight out just asked them that. They'll be like, why, yeah, now that I think about it, there was this guy. He was weird. In addition, Kiel claims hundreds of sightings but fails to name anyone so no one can follow up. It makes those claims worthless and drops the witnesses from hundreds to maybe a dozen. He won't even name witnesses who believed Mothman to be a bird. Again, read his own works. He claims to want to preserve their anonymity and protect them from ridicule. But at the same time, with no ability to corroborate any of his sources, we might as well dismiss them as
fictitious.
Teops? I don't know. Maybe. Fictitious. Yep, maybe that wasn't a spelling. Yeah, so that's the end of my episode. I really feel I'm kind of on the, I mean, obviously these are the, like, this is what they got for criticisms. It's the same kind of criticisms of the Mothman prophecies, which I'll go through when we do the Mothman prophecies next week. For someone who is on the leading edge of finding something in this field, I find him struggling with his interview process. Which is obviously erroneous, but for having something that's so, like, light years ahead with the way he kind of pulled it all together is on kind of the forefront of it. To kind of, like, he still ended up putting something together that they still use to this day. So, I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. Obviously, yeah, he should have been better. I don't think he pulled all of it completely out of his ass. I do think he led witnesses. He left stuff out. He used other people's work. We'll talk about it next week. But he still pulled this all together to come up with, like, a theory that seems to be fairly working for, like,
well, I wonder if it was kind of laziness that led him there. And I just say that, like, he doesn't seem to want to do a thorough investigation or have to give any of his research. So he can connect things by just kind of going into the story and kind of trying to get people to say the things he wants.
Yeah, I honestly, it could be laziness. I think he had things he was trying to connect throughout the process in which he was looking to see if it came up in other circumstances and just went about it the completely wrong way. It very well could have been laziness because he said he just kind of had an interest in it. It wasn't his full-time gig, like, that he originally got into. So he very well could have been, you know, just winging it. And I don't know that I would do any better if I was just like, I have an interest in it my whole life. I don't know that I do any better going out there now to interview people if I just one day was like, you know what, I'm just going to give this a shot.
Yeah, that's fair. And yeah, it could be too that he just wanted to connect these two things so bad that he was leading the stories to kind of go that way. But yeah, it's kind of hard to say. That's especially true. I'm looking forward to hearing the next episode where we get a bit more information so I can kind of make a better informed view on whether he's lazy or intentionally misleading.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even listening to him on our bill, I was just kind of like, this guy's kind of boring to listen to, even though we saw this like weird paranormal stuff. And let me tell you, I listened to the Mothman Prophecies on Audible. I'm having trouble filtering where I should put on what episode. But I thought, you know, maybe it'd be better if John Keel narrated this himself. And let me tell you, no, it wouldn't have, because I found them equally each as boring to listen to.
Well, that's good. Anyhow, and I can't wait to hear the second half of this. But in the meantime, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.